Okay, well, thank you very much. I really appreciate also the opportunity to speak here today. I also appreciate the previous two presenters because I think they've set up the motivation for my talk really well, and I feel like I could probably skip the first 10 slides, but since I have to entertain you for 20 minutes, I'm going to go ahead and go through my introduction, but it's nothing you haven't heard before. So I'm going to talk about the fate of antimicrobials and antimicrobial resistance genes, but I'm looking at a different system, which is an agricultural system. And I'll say I'm coming at this from more of the perspective of the antimicrobials. I look at physical, chemical transport of contaminants, but I work with wonderful collaborators who do the environmental microbiology. So I'm going to put in a plea at the end that you don't ask me a lot of method questions related to the ARG. So first, I need to acknowledge all of my collaborators on this project, primarily Shu Li, who's a colleague of mine in civil engineering, who is the environmental microbiologist and does the quantification of the ARGs. Dave Marks, who helped with us statistics. Dan Snow, I work with at the Water Sciences Lab. And then actually the students who did all of this work, Stacy and Bob Neat. And then our collaborators at the USDA. So they have been integral in allowing us to do some field scale experiments, which I'm going to show today. And then lastly, I want to thank the Pork Board, a National Pork Board, which provided funding for this project. And I just want to point out, I think it's really, they've been very proactive, I think, in wanting to learn about the fate of both antimicrobials and resistance genes in swine manure or in swine production. And I think that really should be commended because a lot of industry groups don't always want to have that information. So just a little bit of background, which again, like I said, this is the time you can snooze. So we give antibiotics to animals. They poop, and we apply that manure to land. In agricultural settings, this is sometimes stockpiled, but mostly just directly land applied. And then once it's applied to land, it can run off with precipitation events to surface water. I'm also going to show you some results from a mitigation strategy, which is a grass hedge. So we also looked at the effect if you put a grass hedge in between the field and the surface water, what happens as far as concentrations of antibiotics and resistance genes in the runoff. So, you know, we give antimicrobials to animals. We raise animals in the U.S. in industrial settings where we have high animal densities, and because of that, we need to use antimicrobials therapeutically for disease treatment, but also prophylactically to prevent disease because of the close confines. We also give antimicrobial compounds for growth promotion to increase weight gain during the production period. Quite a bit depends by antibiotic, but there's a substantial portion of the compound that's excreted in the waste unmetabolized. Also, the reason we care about antimicrobials typically is they don't have a lot of direct toxicity, but as we've been talking about, they lead or can lead to environmental antimicrobial resistance. So this is occurring in hospitals, in the gut of livestock, and then also, as we've talked about today, in the environment, which leads to, you know, the general problem of antimicrobial resistance leads to excessive costs for hospital care and deaths, you know, additional hospital stays. And so our general questions that our group is working on is looking at the relationship between the presence of the antimicrobials and the effects or the occurrence of resistance genes or resistant bacteria in the environment with a focus on ag systems. So just to wrap up my motivation, the reason in Nebraska we're focused a lot on ag systems is because we have a lot of feedlots, many more than we have people. So here's a picture of the state of Nebraska. And each one of these green dots is actually a confined animal feeding operation. So I think, you know, coming, if you haven't been to Nebraska or Colorado or some of these states where we have very high density of animal production, it actually surprises me, and I live like right there. So we have a lot of animals in the state of Nebraska, which are all pooping every day. We have to find something to do with it. And then the last point for our studies or the reason for our collaboration is there have been more limited studies that have tried to look at both the occurrence of antimicrobials and the corresponding resistance genes together in kind of a holistic way, and so that's something that our joint labs have been trying to do. So I'm going to present the results from two studies that we've published. The first one is to look at the effect of land application strategy of the manure on antimicrobials and resistance genes in runoff, and then also looking at the effect of this grass hedge, kind of a mitigation or a treatment strategy as well. So I feel bad. We have also soil data and soil persistence data, but I totally threw all of that out. So I'm just going to talk about the runoff or the mobile portion in this talk. So first thing, in this study of land application methods, this was a really nice study because we were able to do a field scale study because of our collaboration with the USDA. So we collected manure from different parts of a USDA production facility where they use different antimicrobials. So we were able to isolate manure that contained chlortetracycline, tylosin, or bacitracin. And something I think that is nice to point out here is there's actually not a huge amount of data just on the amount of antimicrobials or really resistance genes in fresh manure. So when we were just kind of looking to see how these concentrations compared to literature values, there's some information, but not an enormous amount of information just on concentrations in manure. A lot of studies oftentimes will spike, you know, antibiotics into manure, which is a perfectly reasonable approach. But I just want to point out, I think this information is really important, especially for things here like the resistance genes, where we really don't know what the environmental loading might be from animal manure. So we took our different manures and took them out to a research farm at the university where we looked at three different methods of land application. So we took swine manure and either directly just applied it to the surface, which is called broadcast, so just spread it on the surface, incorporated it, which is mixing it into the top, you know, 6 inches of the soil, or injection, which is actually a deeper injection that goes about a foot below the soil surface, and it's in kind of discrete points in the field. And so, you know, antimicrobials loading through land application of manure is a fairly significant source. There's been estimates that we're actually putting kilograms of antimicrobials into the environment per hectare of a field. So in this study, we at this farm, it was a site that had never previously received manure application, and we were able to do a series of rainfall plot scale runoff experiments, and we could randomize our plots so that we could actually do a randomized block design that allowed us to statistically evaluate the effect of some of these parameters. And so what happens is that we would take these little plots, apply the manure to them in whatever treatment. So we looked both at treatment and at the antimicrobial type. And then each plot received three sequential rainfall simulation studies. So first day the manure went down, then second 3 days were the three different rainfall events, which all had the same rainfall intensity. So we did collect soil, but I'm not going to talk about that. But we collected all of the runoff from the plots, and we composited it for sampling for both antibiotics and resistance genes. We did sample soil again after the third experiment and looked a little bit at vertical transport, and if you're interested in that, that's in our publication. So we looked for, in the runoff, we filtered the runoff, so the data I'm going to show is for the aqueous concentrations for chlortetracycline, tylosin, and then we looked for bacitracin A and also F, which is a primary metabolite, and then a whole host of resistance genes, including resistance tetracycline, ERMBNF, and then some bacitracin resistance genes as well. Okay, so here's some of our results. First for chlortetracycline. So this plot just shows concentrations across the three different methods as a function of runoff events, so 1, 2, and 3. We did see some chlortetracycline in one of our check plots or control plots, and we think this is probably just carryover or contamination, but generally we didn't see anything in our check plots. And so something that was really nice about this study is because we collected all of the runoff off of the plot and then composited it and took a sample, we were able to measure runoff volume. So we were actually able to calculate loading rates from the swine manure application. And so we were actually, you know, able to determine the mass loading of chlortetracycline from these plots from different application strategies. So in the majority, not surprising, you can see it here or see it in the numbers, the majority of the compound is coming off of the broadcast manure plots, so the plots where the manure was just surface applied, and also from the first runoff event, which is, you know, something you may have been able to predict prior to seeing the data, right? So when you just lay the manure on the surface, and in that first runoff event, that's when you get the largest loading of the antibiotic to the environment. So then we can compare. So this is the same Colchester cyclane data from the previous plot, just showed a different way. And here's the data for tylosin. So we saw much higher concentrations of tylosin, which is expected, it's less sorptive. And so we think because we were filtering our runoff samples, probably a lot of the Colchester cyclane was caught up in the solid phase of the runoff and not in the aqueous phase. But again, we could calculate mass loadings, and we saw the same story in that we see the most tylosin coming off of the broadcast plots, which are here in blue, and from the first runoff event. And so going back to our plot design, we were able to do statistics. We didn't see a statistically significant difference between the application strategies, and that's just because we had some variability between the plots, which isn't uncommon when you're doing field scale research, but we did see a statistically significant effect from manure application. So we definitely were able to show that manure was the source of the compounds. So for the resistance genes and runoff, it kind of told the same story. So I guess I should back up. We measured bacitracin. We didn't find any bacitracin, and I think that kind of gets overlooked sometimes, but bacitracin has very short half-lives, and so we didn't see any bacitracin in any of our runoff from the bacitracin amended manure, nor did we find any of the bacitracin resistance genes. So the resistance genes we found were the tetracyclines and ERMB and ERMF, and really saw the same story with the ARGs in that they were occurring in the manure amended plots. They were highest with the broadcast or the blue, and then they were highest as you went from first to third rainfall event. So the second study I'm going to talk about now is trying to look a little bit at a treatment strategy or control strategy. So one management practice that's typically done in agricultural settings is to have a buffer strip, right, a grass strip at the edge of the field, and that can collect contaminants as the runoff moves from the cultivated land to, you know, surface water or off-site. And so at the same location, we were able to conduct a second study in another year where we had a similar design of our plots, but we were able to amend some of them with tylosin-containing manure, and then also some of them had a narrow grass hedge that was a 1.4-meter strip of grass that was at the end of the plot. So here's an example of what the plots looked like. So we would apply manure to this plot, and then collect runoff on the other side of this little strip of grass. And so we just wanted to see, does the presence of this grass strip reduce concentrations of either the antimicrobials or the resistance genes in runoff? This has been shown to be really effective for a lot of conventional contaminants, so nutrients, sediment, but it hadn't really been studied for antimicrobials or resistance genes. So we found reductions in antimicrobial concentration. So this is tylosin concentration in our runoff. The dark red is without the hedge, and the pink salmon is with the hedge. And so we did see reductions in antimicrobials with the presence of the grass hedge. And we saw similar reductions in presence of the ARGs. So we looked, we only really found ERMB. This was just our tylosin-containing manure. We didn't find ERMF, but with ERMB, the single resistance gene we were able to find, we did also see reductions with occurrence of the grass hedge. We saw also, we looked, measured, as Tim showed earlier, 16S RNA, and so kind of see similar trends, and so probably what's happening here is just that we're removing the bacteria, and those bacteria contain the resistance genes. So we did see reductions also in just 16S RNA. This plot shows The antimicrobials in the soil from our control plots are gray, and the amended plots are in red. So this just shows that both our Tylosin and our ERMB are coming from the manure. So before manure, there was really no Tylosin on any of the plots or ERMB. After manure, we found it in our amended plots. And then after the rainfall event, there was still Tylosin present in the soil after the three sequential rainfall events. And same story here for the resistance genes. So the conclusions from this study is that we saw, you know, an order of magnitude removal for Tylosin with these hedges, most likely either due to sorption to plant surfaces or possibly the plants can increase infiltration. So there was just more Tylosin containing runoff infiltrating, which would reduce the amount that we were collecting on the other side. We didn't specifically try to look at where the Tylosin was going. We just collected the runoff coming out of the other side. We also saw removal of resistance genes and 16S RNA, and this is really consistent with other suspended contaminants like suspended sediment or fecal coliforms, and we were able to show that the occurrence of these compounds was attributable to the manure application. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions, and then this data has all been published in a couple of different papers, and so the citations are there if you'd like more information. Thanks. Oh, the detection limit here was, I think, 0.0. It might have been, I think it's 0.0. It's low, because we use the LCMS method. I think it's on the order of tens of nanometers, or nanograms per liter.
Yeah. Usually for the LCMS, you can reach like a nanogram per liter.
Yeah.
So that kind of leads into my next question.
Sure.
What's a reasonable expectation? One part per billion is sort of a, not even, that's a log plot, so maybe 200 parts per trillion is your highest level there. And
yeah.
So you're starting low and you're going lower, which
right.
is probably not bad.
Right.
But how low should we be going? And
oh, you mean as far as in terms of detection or just what we should be expect to see in the environment? Yeah, so I think that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I think that this is one of our overarching questions is what contribution, the occurrence of antimicrobials and at what concentration that leads to ecologic effects, whether that's antibiotic resistance or any other kind of effect. Definitely for antimicrobials, the only studies that show any kind of direct toxicity to organisms, whatever that endpoint might be, are very high concentrations, so almost like therapeutic levels of antibiotics. So certainly this is nothing that we would be concerned about as far as like a direct effect. So I think the question then becomes, do these levels of concentration lead to proliferation of antibiotic resistance? I don't know if I know the answer to that, but I think that's an excellent question. Yeah. Yeah.
Question about the rainfall application.
Sure.
You've got 70 millimeters per hour. This is a huge amount of water.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so this was following a protocol that has been used by the USDA for nutrient runoff for quite a while. So it is. It's a pretty healthy rain event. But I think it's within the reason of, you know, a reasonable value that you could expect to see for, as far as rainfall intensity.
Okay, then we will have 15 minutes left. Thank you.